What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin along with John Krofcik. And John, this is a topic that you are really going to appreciate. Hillary Allen joins us, and she is involved with a group called It's Up to Us. Now, this is a group of young people who recognize that we, the baby boomers, are leaving them with a pile of debt. Now, they've got their own debt, and they've got their own obligations in terms of college and difficulty getting started. But we're talking about the national debt, which you and I have talked about time and time again. And she's saying, hey, look, they're not going to solve it. The baby boomers have left it for us, and they want all their goodies. And they've got AARP and other organizations fighting for every scrap they can for Social Security and Medicare. And she's not begrudging us that by any means, and we being the older set, but she's saying we young people better understand what we're up against. So she's fanning out across America with an organization that's saying it's up to us if we're going to solve this problem, but we've got to get schooled on what the problem is, because no politician is talking about the debt any longer. You wouldn't even know that we're racking it up at these monumental numbers these days in such ways that it's staggering.
It surprised me. Both Democrats and Republicans together, they passed that omnibus
budget.
Yeah, budget. It boggles my brain how they could do it. And who reads this stuff, right? I mean, who knows what was
exactly
in that?
And they took off, you know, all the wraps in terms of some of the limitations they had put upon themselves. And so we're just saying, hey, forget the debt. We don't care any longer. It can be 100% of GDP, and forget about it. Now, the difficulty that she has in my mind, and by the way, I had a wonderful conversation with this young woman. And I, as the older guy, saying, well, I know you really mean well, but let me ask you this. Do you think young people can fathom something that is rather obtuse and abstract, like national debt, when, number one, nobody else seems to be worried about it? Nobody running for president is talking about it. And then on the other side, let's look what we have in door number two. And in door number two, we do have politicians today saying, we're going to pay off your college debt. We're going to help you get free this.
Socialism.
Whatever you call it, John. I mean, look, Social Security, Medicare, we have forms of social, you know, safety net.
Free college,
right.
Free medical.
But what I'm saying is,
what they don't understand is, do they know that somebody pays for that?
Well, the problem is that as a society, why would anybody know that? Because none of us are paying the taxes requisite for the services or benefits we're getting. That's why we're piling up all this debt. So why would anybody understand that concept if they've never really felt the brunt of that? So, for example, our friend Lawrence Kotlikoff tells us that you'd either have to cut services by 30 or 40% or raise taxes to that amount to begin to get this Leviathan under control. So why would these young people have any idea?
Well, I think we got to do a little bit of both, a little balancing act, but if nobody's out there talking about it, then it's not going to get done. So,
well, I think America's got blindfolds on, thinking somehow this problem is going to miraculously solve itself. Remember when President Trump said, oh, the tax bill, that'll help us and we'll have budget surpluses. We don't have any surpluses.
And then we got China out there that's undermining us every move we make. So I don't know. We could end up to be like a third world nation if we don't watch ourselves.
Well, I think in many ways, if America really wants to be honest with itself, we are bankrupt. But we really just, because we are the reserve currency, because we have such strength, and because so many people are invested in the United States, we can't or they can't, or the world can't allow this thing to collapse under its own weight. But we're trying really hard to do that.
We are. Seemingly. We're working hard at it.
So let's talk to this fine and really intelligent young woman about what her movement is about. And we put her to the test, asking whether, in fact, these young people really are going to listen to her message, or are they just going to say, hey, they're promising me X, Y, or Z, and I have no idea how it's going to be paid for because we're already in the hole. Let's keep digging. Well, Hillary Allen today on America Trends.
With us on the line on America Trends is Hillary Allen. She's a senior associate at Net Impact and community manager of the Up to Us campus competition. Up to Us. Well, what's up to us or you, the millennials? What is it that this campaign and competition is all about?
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for having me on today. I'm excited to speak with you. So Up to Us is a campus-based initiative that aims to raise awareness about our America's fiscal and economic challenges. We empower college students who are actually no longer millennials. When I did the competition my senior year in 2016, that was still the millennial range, but we're actually in Gen Z now. College students are now in Generation Z. So I'm currently updating all of our materials, and our target audience is really young people, particularly in college. And what Up to Us is trying to do is to start a nonpartisan conversation about the potential impacts and dangers and challenges of an unsustainable fiscal outlook. So part is looking at the impact of the long-term national debt, but this also encompasses the broader U.S. federal budget, how much we spend on really important social programs like Social Security and Medicare, as well as education and research and development and transportation.
It's interesting, Hillary, because I'm a moderate to liberal guy, and I've done a radio show, now the podcast, and yet I was always really fearful about the debt and would always bring this issue up, whether it was state debt in the Connecticut area where I'm from or the federal debt. And I even went to a symposium that was given by the former Comptroller General of the United States, and I believe that was under the auspices of the Peterson Foundation, and I know that organization has some involvement with you. And it was one of those issues that I was concerned about, but I was always shocked at how few people really cared or understood what this issue is.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason why it's the issue that it is today, is because it's just not a part of the American conversation or the American psyche. You know, every year it seems the news cycle talks about, oh, we're raising the debt ceiling, or, you know, even we're getting to the point where literally our government is having to shut down because of the political gridlock, and yet it's still not getting the attention that it deserves. And it really does come down to bipartisan collaboration and shared sacrifice. And the earlier that we come to common ground, the better for all Americans, because at some point we will have to make sacrifices. And the longer that we wait to address our long-term national debt and our fiscal outlook, the more painful it's going to be.
So, well, you're clearly well-spoken about this issue. But I've got to say that some of the same words that you just uttered, I've heard from people like the former Comptroller General of the U.S. for the last decade. And nothing seems to get done, and it continues to get worse. In fact, under the Trump administration, the debt has grown dramatically, and there's nobody talking about it in Congress that I can tell.
Yeah, it's unfortunate and frankly dangerous that the issue of the national debt and deficits it's basically become a political strategy for politicians to raise the red flag and to fearmonger and say this is an issue, and then only to get elected and have it not be an issue anymore. So what we're really trying to do in Up to Us is to increase the education and understanding around what it means to have a high national debt and what it means specifically for the American context, because America is not Greece and America is not Argentina. So talking to the experts and looking like and asking, okay, what would it look like if we had, if we were to default on our debt, right? What would that actually mean for Americans and our global economy and the U.S. economy? And then especially now, I think this, this conversation is really important to have as we're seeing these policies being introduced by the 2020 Democratic candidates, presidential candidates that are, in my opinion, very exciting, but also very expensive. And so Gen Z and college students right now are the generation that is more politically engaged and more politically active than previous generations, recent generations. And they're also the generation that is spending exponentially more on their college education, and yet their job prospects and wages are stagnant. So their economic outlook as compared to baby boomers and previous historical generations is much different and much more bleak. So they really have the most at stake to understand this issue and to understand its impacts on their lives.
I don't disagree with you at all. However, I just want to make it a little more complicated. Because you talk about the debt, and I know that the public debt is somewhere around $21-22 trillion. Mm-hmm. But if you've looked at the work of Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff from Boston University, he says that when you look at the fiscal gap, meaning everybody born today and all the benefits that would accrue to them based upon the formulas we have, and then the tax against that and what it would yield, we're really something closer, are you sitting down, Hillary, to $200 trillion in terms of the fiscal gap. Is that something that you folks have come across in your research?
It's really interesting. I would love to get that name from you after this interview. I have not heard of that professor, but all of our data is pulled from the Congressional Budget Office, and we encourage team leaders to expand and you know, learn about modern monetary theory, which is becoming more popular and widespread, and learn, get sources and information from outside the Congressional Budget Office as well, because we really want to foster a conversation with a variety of different perspectives on this. But that professor whose name you mentioned, I'm not familiar with, but I would love to learn.
Okay, well, I've talked with you off the air about that, but having said that, what it really means is that based upon what it is that we have obligated ourselves to over a period of time, unless we stop spending at a dramatic clip and pull back on a lot of the commitments, even entitlements that are now going to many in our society, or we start ramping up the tax rates, there's just no way to catch up to this freight train. It's way out of control. And he's a liberal economist. So with all that said, I mean, this is a daunting task, and we keep saying we can't wait much longer, but we keep postponing it. And as you say, there are many people in the political arena today suggesting that there's much more spending that needs to occur. Now, I know you're a nonpartisan organization, but I mean, we've got to look at it realistically. We either have to raise taxes or we have to cut spending. I don't know that there's another way around this, other than the notion that we're going to grow this economy to such an extent that it will be dealt with magically. I think that's what Donald Trump said with his tax plan. And it's not happening.
Yeah, it's a problem that we can't grow our way out of. And yeah, it's that's why it's more important than ever to understand the impact of these extremely expensive policies that are being proposed that sound really alluring and great on the surface level, but without understanding the implications of such expenses, it can be very dangerous. So that's the conversation we're trying to have through these Up to Us campaigns that are happening on college campuses across the country. And it sounds like I should have that professor on a webinar.
Oh, absolutely. But tell me, what is it that young people are saying when they get the news, when they see the statistics that you have in the figures, which, by the way, as I say, are probably very conservative, what do they say?
The first kind of trend that I see is just mere shock. It's hard to grapple with $23 trillion. It's hard to fathom the amount of money that that is. And then it's like, well, like, is this really an issue? Because no one's talking about it. None of the politicians are talking about it. And the last I heard about this is about the debt ceiling. And it sounds like we can just raise the debt ceiling. So, like, what are the real implications? Like, that, those are their questions. They're like, well, what does this really mean, right? And then that's when we go into the real kind of meat of the curriculum of the program, which getting into the nuance and of what the economists are saying. And the scary thing about it is that not a lot of economists know. It's kind of like the wild, wild west. We don't know what the point of no return is. Well, we have an idea, and there's some consensus around what that point of no return is, of debt to GDP, but most economists agree that defaulting, the U.S. defaulting on our debt would be a very bad thing, a very bad thing, not only for the U.S. economy and the people in it, but for the global economy. And another part that is scary for these young people to hear is that Social Security, an institution that's been around for decades, is projected to become depleted in 2034. That's only 16 years away. So I think that that resonates with them. And then there's also this concept that generational inequity, and that, you know, previous generations racked up these deficits, and they're borrowing money from the future, and they're borrowing money out of retirement funds from the grandkids and the children of the future. So it's a really timely conversation to have. And I will say that from the time I've been in the program, I was in the program in 2016, there is hope amongst the next generation. And it's inspiring to see that there's this resurgence of bipartisan collaboration. And there's really this impetus of young people wanting to reach across the aisle and understanding that that's a necessary trade-off in order to reach common ground. And that collaboration is really the key for solving this.
And Hillary, I think all of that is great. Having said that, as a nonpartisan group, you're going to run into political issues, because mm-hmm. the minute you start talking about, in your solutions piece that I have seen on your website, that perhaps we need to reform the entitlement programs, mm-hmm. you're really starting to come after another big voting block of baby boomers, and I'm one of them,
right.
though I have two millennials as children. And so you're then going to say, well, I'm sorry, but we cannot honor some of the obligations, potentially, unless we raise taxes. And who do we raise taxes on? Many of us baby boomers aren't paying the same taxes that we did in the past because, well, we're using retirement dollars or dollars we have already paid taxes on, but it's your generation that's going to have mm-hmm. to pay those taxes. So, I mean, you do immediately end up in the political arena, even
right.
if you try to talk about these issues on a global or transcendent basis.
Yep, that's a really good point, and that's some of the things that I grapple with when I work directly with the students in their campaigns is, like, you know, as soon as you say deficits and debts, it's immediately labeled as a Republican issue, right? Especially because with the 2016 Trump election, it was a hot button issue. And so it's earned itself this Republican label, even though it very much isn't, and both sides of the political spectrum should care about having a sound fiscal policy, especially if you believe that the government's role in society should be, you know, to take care of its most vulnerable populations, then you need a sound fiscal policy in order to achieve that. It's a conversation that, you know, you mentioned, oh, you run right into to politics, and it's absolutely true. And so part of the curriculum is that's why we train our team leaders to have conversations from an impartial way, and that being nonpartisan in this is front and center. So they're prohibited from advocating for any political figure or any specific policy. So we look at entitlement reform, we look at new tax policies that might increase revenues, but they are not saying this is the one policy that we should do, or we should reform entitlement programs. Instead, they're taking this educational approach to it and saying, here are options, right? Let's come to the table and let's discuss as a generation, what do we care about? What's important to us? What sacrifices are we willing to make in order to rectify this potentially dangerous situation?
But I've got to ask you, Hillary, when you raise these issues, and then you do hear people on the campaign trail saying, look, we think this debt that you're all burdened with is horrible, and we want to relieve you of that, or we want to get you all into a public option as it relates to health care or Medicare for all, or we want to give you free community college for this new generation coming through. How do you work your message up against the message that there's more benefit down the road that we'd like to give you when that is so alluring? You said that many of these ideas sound great, but then somebody's got to put a price tag on them and pay for them, or lest we're going to have more debt than we have even today, which is enormous. So how do you work against that in your messaging?
It's a really good question. We are currently working on that. And part of our curriculum is inviting the experts in and trusting the students and their intellectual capacity to understand the nuances of this and to understand the broader trade-offs from the societal perspective of here are these potential policies. Here's the benefit that they could produce. Counteract that with the potential threats or risks of an extremely high debt currently and rising. So it's complicated, but it's not to the point where people are incapable of understanding it. And
they're not incapable, but I will say this for the older generation. There are so many of us who don't really care. We figure somebody will figure that out. Some smarter minds, there'll be a commission, and at the last minute, at the 11th hour, somehow they'll come out with a compromise. Now, I know that that's ridiculous, objectifying this and saying it doesn't fall on me, so I don't care. But I'm telling you, that's what you have to, you know, face when you're talking about an issue that is rather abstract to most. What's not abstract is that somebody's going to take my debt from college, or somebody's going to pay for my medical care, or whatever it may be. Those are not abstractions. I just saw a recent report that you, the younger generations, are going to have to put up with the political muscle of older Americans for several more cycles, because we, the baby boomers, are hanging on longer. We always vote. You know that. We vote prodigiously.
The generation war.
Well, can this issue be put off longer as you await the swing of the pendulum to younger people? Because you have a huge cohort in the millennials, but they aren't as involved. Michelle Obama the other day said, hey, you better get going here. If you want your voice to matter and to be counted, you've got to start voting. So you've got other issues related to your generation in terms of their participation rate in the political process.
Right, and we haven't even talked about climate change yet. Yeah, I know. We absolutely have our work cut out for us, and that's one of the things that motivates me to come to work every day, is that the educational process of this is so important, and we are reaching that point where everybody is expecting this compromise to happen and for smarter minds to figure it out. But without public sentiment support, it's not going to happen. It's simply not going to happen. And we've seen that time and time again with politicians not addressing the long-term national debt and deficits in order for their own political gain, because that's going to get them reelected. So the system itself is not set up for, is not conducive towards a solution.
Yeah, you're going to see at your seminars a lot of heads nodding. Yes. Oh, yeah, that's a problem. Okay, who wants to give up this or take away from either defense on one side or social programs on the other? And not a lot of hands are going to go up. What about some of the other issues? Because sometimes you need foundational issues in order to change things. In other words, Michelle Obama talking about voting. What about lowering the voting age? I, in a jocular sense, on one of my podcasts said maybe those of us over 55 or 60 should not be able to vote, because we're not going to have to wrestle with the problems that are going to be afflicting the next generations. And so we might be more day traders or short-term voters because we're thinking about our own needs as opposed to the long term, particularly with an issue like debt or the climate. So I, not that I'm asking that you disenfranchise all of us, but what about enfranchising more people, like 16-year-olds? You think that's at all part of the conversation?
Absolutely it is. We talk about voter registration and voter education a lot in our curriculum, and we're actually looking at ways to explore how we can build partnerships with getting out the vote. There's so much great work being done across the country, engaging young people in getting out the vote. And it's absolutely part of the conversation. And I was at a recent conference this past summer, and it was all about civic engagement in higher education. And one of the main takeaways that I got from that conference is that there's so much work being done on getting out the vote and voter registration, not enough work being done on voter education. And I think that's where our sweet spot is, because fiscal policy is inherently tied to so many other issues. It's the spoke of the center of the wheel, the nexus of the wheel that is connecting all these other issues that we care about: healthcare, education, infrastructure, R&D, climate change, and yet we're totally missing the elephant in the room. I believe personally that if we can start this educational process, or at least give students like a bare minimum, or just to be thinking about fiscal policy and think about things from a budget perspective, from the federal budget perspective, we can have a much more productive conversation about the things we care about.
But if policymakers and legislators really are not bringing this attention to the fore, I mean, there's really no one that you could identify in Congress today who you would say, oh, there is he or she, and they're really on this debt issue. It makes it really hard, because it makes us all believe in a way that we can go to sleep on this issue and it won't affect us. So, I mean, where do you go to affect them? Are you going to be going to Congress and ask for a hearing on this issue with just young people involved, those who have a long-term stake in how they deal with this now?
We are sad to see Jeff Flake, the representative from Arizona, retire this past year. He was a real champion for fiscal sustainability. But to answer your question, part of what we do in Up to Us is we ask the teams to sign a pledge that essentially, it's nonpartisan, and essentially says, I'm a young person and I am in support of bipartisan solutions to addressing the long-term national debt. That's all it says. And so through that method, we hope that we can build a movement and build critical mass, informing our elected officials that, hey, we do care about this. Hey, we are thinking about this. This is our Social Security and Medicare and future that you're talking about. And so we do that. And then we also, one of the prize trips is going to Washington, D.C. and attending the Peter G. Peterson Fiscal Summit. And this is a convening among several high-level economists and policymakers and movers and shakers in Washington. And we expose them to the conversation at the national level. This past year, Mulvaney, the president's current chief of staff, was there and gave an interview with one of the CNN correspondents who were there. And so we are hoping that by exposing the Up to Us top leaders to these national conversations, that will help spur understanding and further action on this as well.
Does your generation feel any bitterness toward older Americans who are leaving you with this pile of debt and not terribly concerned about it, much more concerned about cost of living increases? But there are many reasons for this. Don't forget, a lot of older Americans used to have pensions, and those are gone. Even some of the backstops to pensions now are crumbling as we look at guarantees that cannot be kept. So there are a lot of people looking at their situation saying, I'm holding a bag, but you're going to be holding a much bigger bag in many ways.
I don't like that argument to this. I don't think it's productive. And I think maybe individually some people feel maybe some jadedness or hey, this is unfair. But when you're looking at it from a historical perspective, it wasn't like the baby boomers knew what they were getting into or like were intentionally building up deficits. They were doing the best they can. Everybody was doing the best they can trying to make the most sound decisions at the time. And so I don't think that it's a productive use of brain space to say, hey, this isn't fair, you know? I'd prefer to help people think about it from a solutions-oriented perspective and to understand the historical context of how we got here and the laws behind how we got here. But I think it's more productive to look forward and say, here's what's being proposed. How can we solve this?
Do young people see climate change or the national debt as being a greater danger to their future?
Take a guess.
Climate change.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So we're seeing Generation Z take more of an interest, more so than millennials, in climate change with Greta Thunberg leading the charge. So one of the things that I'm currently working on actually in building the curriculum for this year is understanding the fiscal cost of climate change. Climate change is really expensive if we don't address it. And so actually, if you care about climate change, if you care about fiscal sustainability, you should really care about climate change because it's going to be very expensive for the country with the natural disasters that are looming.
Do you think, by the way, that your generation imagines that things like Social Security and Medicare, let alone the new ideas that are coming about during this campaign, do you think that you think that they'll be there for you in any way, shape, or form?
Right now, it's looking pretty bleak. I mean, if we were to only take the data coming out of the Congressional Budget Office, no. Personally, I'm hopeful because I have to be, and I don't see any other option. We're expecting a lot of companies, and we're expecting a lot of the government, and it's shifting now to expecting even more from the government, especially as we see the trend turn to having to a typical individual having multiple working at multiple companies throughout their 40-year career, and not just one company, not having that company loyalty over the course of their 40-year career. We definitely have our work cut out for us.
Absolutely. In closing, Hillary Allen, is there any solution that you see on the table, and you do have some up on your website, that you think is the most practical or the one that can get bipartisan support?
Again, I'm not speaking on behalf of Up to Us because we are nonpartisan, but my personal opinion is, you know, we have to understand fiscal policy. We have to have our congressional elected officials understand fiscal policy and the mechanisms by which we are federal budget earns money and spends money. And we have to take into consideration the values of U.S. citizens and the most pressing issues and urgent issues of our time and reduce the amount of suffering, the most amount of suffering as possible. My opinion, I think climate change is a biggie. So I am, and especially working for Net Impact, which is a nonprofit focused on environmental sustainability, I think that's a route through which and a lens through which we can get creative and increase revenue. And I think there's a lot of opportunity in solving this fiscal crisis through environmental sustainability.
Okay, Up to Us. Hillary Allen is with us. And in closing, Hillary, if somebody's listening to this as a young person or older person and wants to attend an event or know more about this organization, how can they do that? I mean, what are the mechanisms to get involved?
Absolutely. They can visit itsuptous.org, our website, and you can get involved directly by going to the Get Involved tab on our website. You can also check us out on Twitter at Up to Us News, and Instagram, it's up the number 2 us is our handle. So yeah, we'd love to speak with you. And if you know any young people who would like to get some leadership development experience and campaign management experience, please send them my way.
Okay. Hillary, thank you so much for being with us today on America Trends.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Larry.
America Trends podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.